You'll have to forgive me. My voice sounds like I'm going through puberty, and I don't think that's possible because we have children. But, you know, so please bear with this. I was trying to process, what does Mexico mean to me? Mexico means to me I can actually drive down the street and actually think a stop sign is a suggestion rather than a $360 fine like here in Temecula. I can go and walk to my son's school and easily identify him at the end of the day. I don't have to watch out for traffic coming down the streets. I have to certainly look left and right for wild galloping horses coming down the center of the dirt road. Mexico has so many different things in my life and means so many radical changes that it's hard for me to express. And I just want to, I'm here partly because Rob asked, but I'm here to say thank you to the church and those 20-some people who came down about a month and a half ago. And I'm going to show some pictures and talk about that. But I don't know what Mexico means to you. I'm sure all of us have different stories. Drug runners and prostitution and people going to Tijuana and doing things that really shouldn't be done. You guys with me on this? I'm here to tell you. I haven't seen those things yet. And I think God's hand has gone before us and through us and in us to kind of guard us from those things. But today I want to talk about something that I hope has purpose. Rob asked me a few weeks back, "Hey Doug, I think we're doing like a missions Sunday, last Sunday of this year. Can you come talk?" And I says, "Let me pray, and I'll get back with you in a few days." Recently, in this past year, I've learned to seek God's hand and direction, and I've actually said no to two different speaking engagements because I didn't feel the Spirit prompting me to say something. I didn't have a word. I didn't have anything to talk about. So why go up there and pontificate, right? If there's really nothing that the Spirit's drawing you to say. Well, two or three days later, I said, "Rob, I feel yes, we can do it because the Lord has given me a word that echoes, hello, let's see who we can embarrass with that phone ringing." But anyhow, maybe it's the Lord. Answer it. He might have changed the word. But servanthood is what came to mind. And I think this is something that for many of you, you have a really firm grasp and understanding of it. And I'm hoping it will only help fuel and kickstart some of us who might not even be seeing the value of that. One of my favorite top 10 movies, it's called Life is Beautiful. Now, I have quite a few in the top 10. For something, when that movie came out a few years back, it touched me in a very meaningful way. The scene that I want to talk about, but I guess I should give a little context if you haven't seen it. Life is Beautiful is about a 20-something Italian Jew who is learning about life through certainly funny lenses as he sees things. And he finds the wife of his dreams and has a beautiful boy. And then World War II erupts, and being a Jew catapults him. Well, that's a big word for some of the freshmen in the audience. It springs him into disastrous results. He's captured and he's brought to concentration camp. And the movie that I find so appealing is that he finds the beauty in every ugly situation. But the scene that I think resonates with me that talks a little bit about the servanthood is when he's talking with his uncle who owns a restaurant. And his uncle is trying to train this inept Guido of how to do things properly. And so he's asking him all these questions about how you serve the food and what kind of food. And he goes, "And how should you actually bow while serving?" And Roberto Benigni kind of begins stammering and he says, "Bowing, piece of cake. You bow down further like a 45-degree angle." He's looking at his uncle and his uncle's kind of frowning. 60, 80, 90 degrees. That's how you should bow. And his uncle kind of looks at him in a little confused way. He says, "How far should you bow down?" Yes, 90 degrees. 90 degrees. And his uncle's response is this. Think of a sunflower. They bow to the sun, but if you see some of them that are too bowed down, it means they're dead. You're serving. You're not a servant. Serving is a supreme art, he says. God is the first servant. God serves men, but he's not a servant to man. Now, the first time I saw this movie in the movie theater, I thought, wow, what a powerful statement that is. When I went and rented it about 6 months later, I had to pause, rewind, listen to that line again, and I thought, that is completely false. Didn't God come to completely serve man? Isn't that the point of the cross? He served us to the point of death. So although in that movie it does kind of portray itself as some truth, when you dig deeper, it is completely felonious and off base. Robert, next slide. The point of our ministry in Ventana is really trying to equip recent high school graduates. Equip them for what their next stage in life would be. In my 14 years of teaching high school and hearing the stories of students who've gone off to college, I didn't hear a whole lot of success. In fact, I heard many parents who were kind of frustrated as to the choices their children were making. And so when God called me into this ministry to really address Wes and Brittany and hopefully countless other students who want to kind of grow up before they go into the college setting, this is what ushered into Ventana Ministries. It is really a ministry whose focus is recent high school graduates, but we do it in the context of service. Next slide, please. These are, my wife, Carrie, and the other couple is Jason and Tina. They're from Philadelphia, and they make sure they're proud of Philadelphia. He called me the other day and said, Philly won, right, in their last football game. He just, everything about Philly. We will see them here in a few days on the next slide. But this is our purpose. Brittany, you're a wallflower in that picture. But you ask, what does missions have to do with recent high school graduates? I think everything. We're trying to usher into them a lifestyle that doesn't separate missions from life. We're challenging them to say they blend. They should always intersect in everything that we do. And it doesn't matter if we're working at the local lube shop or if we're actually some CEO president. Our lives should be streamed together Sunday morning and Monday morning. Next slide, please. Henri Nouwen, I'm going to read an excerpt from a book written by Philip Yancey called Soul Survivor, where he recounts an incident of Henri Nouwen that helps us understand the heart of servanthood. At one point in time, the pressures of fame, his teaching schedule at Harvard, and personal issues that came increasingly weighty combined to push him to the point of a complete breakdown. During this time, he received a visit from the director of Les Hauches Home, an organization that works with seriously disabled children in France. Her name is Jan. She visited Nouwen for a few days, cooked meals for him, and helped him in very practical ways. Nouwen kept expecting the inevitable request to speak, to come to a conference, to write an introduction to her book, something he expected she'd ask him to do. No request ever came. Jan was serving Nouwen and bringing him grace in pure and simple form with no strings attached. Her visit made such an impression that Nouwen, a Catholic priest, asked his bishop for permission to join her in France. For the first time in his life, he sensed God calling him to do something. He wanted to learn what seminary and theology doesn't teach, how to love God and how to discover the presence of God in my own heart. Nouwen learned this through an unconventional service. What went on from that month and a half that he spent there? He was called to start his own home for disabled children in Canada. And with his 13 books that he's written, that some of you, I'm sure, have discovered him, although Catholic, there's some amazing insight that he has brought that it challenges us to think and look at things in a spiritual term. His life, he didn't feel was complete until he had followed that calling that God brought him. It took a long time for Henri, well on his career, for him to truly serve unconditionally. One thing we need to be careful of is that although I might be on a radical path of service, and although some of you in here might have gone to India and to Nepal and to Haiti, we're all in a different point. It's unfair for me or others to expect you, just because we've been there, you got to be at that same level of growth. I think Henri is a perfect example of that. That we should all just be hoping that there is some sort of growth in our life. I have a short little anecdote. I grew up, like I said, in this beautiful town where people go to die, Hemet, California. And the rumbles occur, and because there's some truth to that. I grew up in a small congregational church where maybe 100, 125 people were there. And it was really, you know, I didn't think anything different about it. But anytime a guest would show up, the pastor, during their introduction time, would come down off of the stage and would hand a microphone to them and say, "Introduce yourself to us." And then that was the trigger for the rest of the body at the end of the service, is that we as the children were coached to go and talk to their children, and the adults were coached to go talk to the adults, hoping to create this one big love fest, and please return. It seemed a little neurotic now on the other take of things, you know. I was looking for the Kool-Aid to take, but anyhow, it was just, I just thought that's how everything was done. But there's something kind of redeeming about that, is that we need to give time as people progress through this idea of servanthood, the breathing room to discover their own uniqueness and their own giftedness in that. So I just say that at the very beginning, is that please don't think that if you're not there yet, that's beautiful. That's okay. That's redeeming. The main point of what I'd like to talk about today is that true servanthood is where we live out what we say we believe. And my passage today, we're not going to be kind of diving in a whole lot, but I do have some biblical references in Mark 10, and I'm going to read a passage from that. Mark 10, 35 through 45. And the context of this is that Jesus is kind of trying to gear up his fellow disciples and prepare them and equip them for this triumphal entry and eventually his death on the cross. And so he's kind of in this, I don't want to call it hyper speed mode, but he's certainly saying, come on guys, you've been with me all these years, let's kind of begin catching on. And we see a little speed bump in Jesus' plans here. Starting in verse 35, we have James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Jesus responds, what do you want me to do for you? They replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said. You can drink the cup, or can you drink the cup I drink by be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? We can, they answered. Tremendous faith. Jesus said to them, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared. When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. And here's the point. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become a great among you must be a servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. You know, I'm trying to play in my mind, what were James and John thinking? And I think kind of sarcastically, it's like, Jesus, I hope you realize that we've been here with you for so long. We're really important, you know. We have an important role on this earth to fulfill. We're equipped. We're ready to be recognized for all the wonderful things we know and all the things that we've done. James and John thought that they, you know, they're ready to go. And Jesus' quickly responds to them is, well, if you really want to be great, that's not the way it's going to take place. Point number one, a servant heart is humble. A servant heart is humble. We're to model the life of Christ and assume his posture of servanthood. The whole of creation was at Christ's feet And yet he chose a life of humble servanthood to exhibit the nature of God. He lived his life in obscurity and often on the peripheral. Yet throughout his life, he's provided ample examples of unconditional servanthood. As we continue to grow in our relationship with Jesus Christ, I'm of a firm belief that our understanding of his call in our lives, we begin to see that we must move from our natural tendency of self, inwardness, to a natural growth to outwardness. A little of my testimony, I truly, truly believed, working in the public high school setting, serving with Steve Solomon for all those years in the youth ministry, going with Rob and others on missions trips overseas and just proclaiming the gospel message, I had the sweetest gig possible. Worked 186 days a year, played a whole heck of a lot, and served Jesus in all of that context. For some reason, God wasn't satisfied with that. And I felt a calling to go into this ministry that God, you know, prepared me for. I don't feel equipped, but prepared me for. And here I stand before you, not having the answers, not knowing sometimes what the next step is, but hopefully faithfully stepping forward in a humble fashion. I have to tell you that this call that God has placed on my wife and I has brought us more fulfillment and joy than all the years of teaching. Look at these two. It's a blessing. My encouragement to you is that I pray your ears will be open and your hearts will be receptive. Because God has a calling for each and every one of you, whether that's here in town or somewhere else. Are we going to be humble enough to say, let me magnify you and obey? That's it. We all have a God-shaped vacuum that only He can fill through Christ. And as we follow Him in an unconditional servanthood, we receive this blessing from God in our lives. Servanthood is the opportunity to experience the pleasure of God in every action. I'll repeat that again. Servanthood is the opportunity to experience the pleasure of God in every action. A servant, point number two, a servant's heart is evangelistic. Is evangelistic. Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. Verses 11 through 13. It was He who gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, and some to be pastors and teachers, to prepare God's people for works of service so that the body of Christ may be built up until we all reach unity in the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. When Paul was writing to the Ephesians about this very matter, I don't believe church was ever intended, at least according to Paul, to be just one big hug fest. Let's come together and just hug on each other and let's just invest in each other all the time with really no outward thing. And I think Rob really touched upon that in a powerful statement that, you know, we have upliftingness, but we also can have outwardness. The church is here to equip the people for ministry and service in the family, the community, and the world. It is the root of our Christian faith. And I've seen some amazing things that have happened in this body. Many of you have become transformed. Many of you are trying to take up there to come down here. And you're doing that by going out there. And that is very encouraging. I think part of the DNA that this Temecula Hills Fellowship has exhibited thus far is this DNA of servanthood. Go to the next slide. I sent out in October time a letter to every head pastor and youth pastor that I knew. And I said, we are in a major crunch time. I'm waving the white flag. Now, I'm a man of pride. And going into ministry has really taught me a lot of things. And one is that if I'm moving forward in obedience, God is going to place me into areas that I feel very, very uncomfortable. And one of them is asking for help. You think asking for directions while I'm lost is difficult? Try going asking for help in a lot of other things. And I think in my initial sinful nature was, Doug, you didn't plan well, you didn't prepare well. The reason these things aren't getting done is because you didn't do your job. You know what? I was convicted the next day by saying, Doug, you're robbing others the opportunity of giving the joy of service. Typed out this email, fired it off, and this church was one of them that responded. They said, Doug, how can we help you? Boom! I sent Rob the needs list, and here it was. And this church said, we want to do this. We want to bless you. Look at some of the pictures there, Robert. Before your group arrived, this chunk of land was given to us by the local church. I'll tell more about that. And here you see this big ditch. It's 10 foot by 20 feet. Not that big of a deal. But water is a very valuable commodity where we are. So this is the next step. So by the time that this church arrived, all they saw was this cement floor. Probably no idea what was beneath it. I told them, don't look underneath there because they might find some missing bodies or something. You know what I'm talking about, you know? But what was the result? I said, Rob, we need water, and we can't really get water from this cistern to put in all this phenomenal stuff that was donated to us because it might go walking away in the middle of the night. We need to have a secure facility. This is what your church has done. Because of this, we'll have students that are able to take showers. Can't drink the water, but you can have showers. This to you might not seem like that big of a deal. To me, it's a direct link of answered prayer. To me, it's a direct link of the body working together. The body that says, this will have a tremendous impact for years on down the line. So I'm here to say thank you for being willing to serve in that way. Thank you for the DNA that's been so established, and it will be passed on to the children that go to this church. Point number three. A servant heart is loving. Tucked away in Paul's words in Ephesians is another piece of servanthood puzzle. We serve so that the body of Christ may be built up and become mature, gaining in the fullness of Christ. I mean, aren't we literally surrounded by thousands of people in this town of Temecula and Murrieta where people are spiritually dying? Maybe even some in our own families are spiritually dying. Brothers, sisters, parents, children. We are living in a world that desperately needs to hear about the love and know that they are loved. They need to be loved by our service. Go to the next slide. Brittany shared about one example of where Elm Street Mission, a mission that is faith-based, that says, we believe radically that these men and women who are strung out on every possible thing are worthy of a relationship with Jesus Christ. And what do they do about that? They hold church services. They serve meals. It is a radical thing, like Brittany was sharing. I said, go sit with them. It's not a beautiful, clean body like this. You got people that haven't showered in 4 or 5 days that still reek of alcohol and weed. You know what I'm talking about. And I said, hi, Brittany, you're here. Go. Sit down with them. What was that message that Brittany's symbolic gesture of sitting next to them was about? You're loved. You're not dirty. I care for you. And then when we returned 6 weeks in a row, we befriended these people. They befriended us. Here we see Steve. He was on the streets 5 months before, made a decision for Jesus Christ because of the director who is so involved with their lives. And now what is he doing? He's faithfully serving, passing out clothes every Wednesday, every Friday, every Saturday, every Sunday to the people that come in. He's sharing about the blood, what Jesus Christ has done for him. He's testifying. We have Al on the far right who's still living in a van to this day. But he knows Jesus loves him. And he has a hope for what lies ahead. This is David. In our 6 weeks there, our ministry had a great opportunity. We took him out to dinner. We fed him. We bought coffee stuff. And I said, how can we help you get a job? Or, you know, keep a job. He goes, I need a bus pass. He's not looking for freebies or take advantage of it. So we bought him a bus pass. He's a man that now has, dare I say it, value. Isn't that what we're called to do? To bring value and dignity to others? These are things that I think our body needs to hear, but these students are having personal experiences that I hope will carry on for the rest of their lives. Next slide, please. Number four, a servant heart takes risks. A heart molded by God's love will risk. For some, we don't serve because we're afraid someone will take advantage of us. Have I been taken advantage of in Mexico since I've been there? Yes. I told our board members how I was taken advantage of. It happens. From the Coffee Street Ministry to other things, does that prevent me from continuing moving forward in faith? No. We have a great God that's going to take those blunders and those mistakes and where people think they've taken advantage of the situation. God is going to be glorified through that. But what is it that causes us to be like Henry Nguyen, who for 25 years as a priest thought he had it all figured out, and all of a sudden he's now finds himself serving children with physical disabledness, and he's now having a life more fulfilled than ever before? He was willing to take a risk to get involved. And I want to tell a little story that I don't know how it resonates with this church body, but all I can do is testify. Now, my qualifier. We're all fundamentally the same in our doctrinal beliefs. But since going to India and going to Nepal and living in Mexico, I've seen the Spirit move in ways that I can't really explain. And in my logical sense, I want to sit there and keep it in a box or up on some nice little glass box on a shelf somewhere and say, that's cool, God's been moving in that way, but it's not part of my life. I'm going to take 4 to 5 minutes to take on a little rabbit trail that I think has a powerful statement at the end. Next slide. When God first called us into this ministry, we had to go find a location so Brittany and Wes will have a place to sleep. The first place we went to, God directed us to La Gloria. It's just outside of Tijuana, and the facility was amazing. The community was wonderful, and we were ready to move forward. I brought down all our supporters and our board of directors, and we said, we're moving forward. 2 weeks later, the building is sold from out from underneath us. Híjole, qué onda? You know, what's happening? You know? So, okay, Lord, I thought it was ours. But what's happening? Well, he closed the door. Next slide. I then kind of begin praying more. I make some more phone calls. I then discover DJ and Lynette, who do an orphanage down in La Mission, about another 30 minutes south. And DJ says, Doug, whatever we have is yours. We have 4 acres. It's yours to do whatever you want. I'm thinking, Lord, thank you. This is even better from where we were before. Well, as we started looking at the community, all what was there were a bunch of retired white people. I don't know how they're going to change our lives. They're too much like us. So I said, Lord, I'm trusting you that you're giving me this inspiration. This isn't the place either. We're going to leave this beautiful Taj Mahal and we're going to go to the next slide. Ah, House of Peace, that fits so well. Here was an orphanage that had an 8-bedroom house, 100-bunk dormitory, our own church to have our classes in, all with everything ready for us. All we had to do was pay a simple rent. Doesn't that sound like an amazing facility? Trust me, it was phenomenal. I thought Disneyland was found in the middle of Baja. A month before we were to move in, I just kept praying and sensing that this isn't the place. this isn't the place. And I had to call the director and say, I can't move forward with this. What? Why not? He was a little bothered by that. And I said, I'm not feeling, coincidentally, at peace with this. What are you going to do? I don't know. It was a 2 weeks of heart searching, firing off emails to board members and other people saying, we thought we found it, but we don't anymore. And what are we going to do? People kept asking. Pray and wait. Well, as my wife and I continued to pray and wait, the Spirit said, just go. So that next morning, about 2 weeks after we said no to this, I said, Carrie, keep the bags packed because we're still moving to Port Vanier. What? Where are we going to live? I don't know. What are we going to do? I don't know. That was my answer to everybody. I don't know, but we're still going to go. Talk about the ridiculousness of that. You guys with me on this? Some of you were probably just going, oh, the homeboy has fallen off the edge. Next slide. In the between that time, Dave Burdett, one of our board members, says, Doug, I don't know why I didn't think of this person before, but I want you to contact Marco Schultz, a pastor and a dear friend of mine for over 30 years. Talk with him. Now, he looks a little funny in this little outfit here. He looks like Aladdin, so to speak. If he knew what I was doing to him right now, he certainly would, not be in favor of that. But he and I meet for lunch in San Diego, and I share with him God what God's doing, and he goes, boy, that's really interesting. Share with me about this vision that God placed upon your heart. How can we help? But that was it. We left for lunch. I didn't know what would come of it. 3 days later, I get an email from him. He says, my wife and I have discussed, I brought this before the elders. We want to invite you to come and partner with us. I'm like, you don't even know me. My neighbors want nothing to do with me, yet you're inviting me here, right? What's that about? So 2 weeks after that, go to the next slide, we go back down, and I kind of want to give him another opportunity to say, reject me. You don't know me. What's this about? And I want to pause, and here's where a little confusion might come into place. And we just read from Ephesians 4. There'll be teachers and prophets. Marcos, in his 30 years of being a pastor down there, has been asking a man from Texas, his name is Joe, who he believes is a prophet, to come and preach to his church once a year, the first week of every January. A year before my arrival, before Marcos and I meet, Joe told the body that there would be an opportunity for them to start a Bible school right in their town. I didn't know this story. Then at this meeting, this is on the second week of January that we met. The week before, Joe was there again sharing a word, and he kept saying this phrase over and over 3 times. God is neither early nor late, but right on time. His wife, I thought that was really cool. We're sitting down at their house. We're getting to know each other, and Veronica asked me a question about what do I think about just moving to Fort Vanier with nothing ever in place. And I don't know what prompted me, but I said, I don't know. I'm just trusting that God is never early, never late, and never on time. I mean, never. let rewind that there. Never early, never late, but right always on time. His wife and he stopped talking, looked at each other, said, would you excuse us? We're going to go make some coffee. They came back 2 minutes later with the coffee, and he says, Doug, we are now ready to move forward in a complete wholehearted way. And I'm like, well, what just happened? I'm here to tell you that God has been orchestrating things beyond my control. And amen for that. He has brought me into relationship with a pastor in a church that has a passion for missions beyond belief. For a community that has accepted us as their own. They've given us 3 acres to build all these things on. It's just astounding. And had I been stubborn, and had I been following the worldly pattern of like, these buildings make sense, this is of course where you want us, Lord. A relationship with him and his church, their future teachers. You with me on this? This community are our teachers. Would never have taken place. Last slide. What is there now? A dirt field is what we started with. And we now have dormitories where students sleep, and we have four like houses on there for students to live and hang out in, and you're all invited. I'll even invite a mariachi band down if you need one to get you down there, okay? Next slide. A servant's heart is responsive. A servant's heart is responsive. Servanthood means aligning our hearts with the heart of God. It means responding to His love and grace. It means giving away what we have received. In this way, we discover our passion, fulfillment, and joy. I want to give you an image of what matters in this world. Robert, next slide. Things that seem to entangle us. A house. Now, a house is a big deal, is it not? We live in a place where owning the right to a house and getting it all fixed up is really a big deal. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. You know, I've heard of stories of people who moved to Temecula 20 years ago and they said, I bought it for $120,000. Now what do they tell me? It's worth $1.2 million. And they're saying with such, you know, excitement. Let me tell you something. That doesn't excite me a whole lot. Shut up. Don't tell me anymore how much it's worth. I don't think any of us really care how much it's worth. We're not in the house. But the next slide is a vintage 1974 Volvo station wagon, my first car. A total chick magnet, I'm telling you. Come on, ladies, you know that would have won you over. It went 0 to 60 in 19.2 seconds. Who wouldn't want that beauty? Well, some of us have spent, you know, a lot of money on cars, and is there anything inherently wrong with that? Not at all. But I'll tell you more what, you know, what the value of that is in a little bit. Many of us, looking at the piggy bank, that stands for money. You know, a man has to have his money. Family needs money. You know, I heard a commercial ad the other day that says, you know, I don't even know what they were selling, but the tagline was this. Would you like the kind of money that would give you worry-free life? What kind of money is that? Every rich person I know is still just as worried as I am, and I got jack. I don't know where they come up with these taglines. But it's just we for some reason think money's going to create us a worry-free life. This computer here in my mind represents our jobs, our career, things that we, you know, are working toward. And many of us, our jobs seem to be the only thing that we're wrapped up in. Next slide, Robert. But I got to tell you that every one of these things are temporary. The house that you're so quickly trying to make double payments on and become debt-free on, you know what? It's going to turn to rubble some point. The car that was so beautifully, meticulously taken care of, the vintage 74 Volvo, it's rusted. The money that we thought still brought worry. And the final thing is, sorry folks, but you can lose your job. That's a cannon, boom, you know, sending you packing. The best things that this world has to represent is all temporary. It's temporary, 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 and temporary. They're all going to wear out. They're all going to fade. If you've set your heart on these things to bring about some sort of peace in your life, some sort of validation or fulfillment, the best that this world has to offer will fade away, folks. There's only one thing in this room that is not temporary, and that one thing says eternal. That one thing is the person sitting next to you. Now, some of the single guys are going, yeah, right on. She's pretty cute. It could be your neighbor. It could be your mom. It could be your dad. The one reality that you can take with you from this world to the next is that the souls of the men and women you love. So what do you want your life to be about? In this challenge for the new year, do you want to continue chasing things that are eventually just going to rust or melt or fade away? What's the grander purpose in your life? Jesus taught, and the Bible affirms this, that heaven and hell are real places, folks. God puts people in our world, our families, our neighborhood, and at our work, so that way we can be a servant to them. How's your heart right now when it comes to seeing others? In this year ahead, can you place others within the eternal perspective? Let's pray.